Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. We're excited to be with you. I'm Heather Choate. How are you doing, Mark Johnston?
I'm doing wonderful this week. It's good to be here. I'm excited for the topic today.
Awesome. I'm excited to take a break from being outside. I love being outside, but we've been outside like 10 plus hours a day working on our landscaping, and I've got the blisters to prove it.
Wow.
So I was literally just hauling Riverwalk with my teenage son like 20 minutes before. So I'm a little flushed, but excited to chill with you guys for a little bit and enjoy the air conditioning. It's really hot here in Southern Colorado still, even in September. So today we are talking about why you are unhappy in your relationship and how to make an unhappy relationship happy again. So that's going to be super exciting. And know that you're not alone if you feel like your relationship is less than happy or healthy right now. 92% of couples would agree with you. So most people can relate to this topic. I related to this topic at times in my marriage of almost 17 years, and I'm excited to dive into that with you guys. Before we get to that, though, we always share our client win of the week. I'll share this one. It comes from a group member anonymously. Small win, my husband, who has not been responsive to all my texts, called me yesterday because he noticed I wasn't at work. We work in the same building. So what I like to see here is that we look for these different markers in a relationship, right? The first one is that we want to have your spouse hit the pause button so they're no longer pulling further away from you. The second one is we want them to start to take some steps towards you. And so this is an indication that husband, who was previously unresponsive to text messages, now is calling her and noticing that wasn't at work. And so this is a sign that he's starting to take some steps towards her. Now, I know some people are like, okay, that's not such a big deal. He should do that anyway. You should be solving all these major issues. You should be reconciled and all that stuff, right? But what we realized is that slow is fast. And sometimes these really seemingly small changes or small shifts actually indicate that things are heading in the right direction. One of the biggest mistakes that you can make is pushing for commitment too soon in the marriage if your spouse is pulling away, and that absolutely will backfire, or pushing for connection too soon. And so that's why we actually look for these two markers first. Mark, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think you're right here that it's good to acknowledge some of these small wins sometimes, because while, like you said, it might not seem like a huge deal that her husband called her, it does indicate some more comfort or some more willingness to engage and interact where previously that hasn't been the case, especially if he wasn't even responding to text messages. Him reaching out is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it is. All right, so we put a poll, as we often do, a question over in the Thriving Marriage Facebook group. If you're not a member, I encourage you guys to check it out. It's one of the fastest growing marriage groups out there. So the Thriving Marriage group, we asked you guys, what causes unhappiness in your marriage right now? Why are you unhappy in your marriage? If you guys are watching on YouTube or somewhere where you can leave a comment, let us know. We will respond to every single comment that we get. So why are things less than happy for you right now? Mark, what did you realize or what did you notice going through some of the comments that were given? We got over 73 comments very quickly. So what did you see happening over there?
Well, I saw like a lot of different things. And I think like for me, when we have these kind of questions or posts, I'm always looking for themes and principles because, you know, it's really easy to have 70 some comments and have 70 different answers. And then we, you know, do we learn anything from any of this? And I would say no. You know, but what I'm hearing of is a lot of lack, you know, a lack of communication, a lack of support, you know, or perhaps even the, you know, I had a few in here that where they're commenting, they're just, the spouse is absent. You know, that's certainly a lack of a spouse. you know,
we laugh about that.
Yeah, I guess we shouldn't laugh. I mean, but yes.
That would cause unhappiness, though. It's a very logical reason to be unhappy.
I mean, certainly there are other things that are more additive, like things like lies and addiction. But really, you know, those sort of things, we could even frame it as a lack, like a lack of control, or, you know, a lack of trust or security. You know, if there's lies, it's a lack of openness. But, you know, I think I was even commenting to you before the podcast today. I was approaching this and I was like, what are the principles at work here? And like, what kind of approach do I want to have when discussing something as broad as unhappiness? And, you know, like I said, there's so many different ways we can look at this. There's so many different answers here in this post. And so I wanted to have us, you and I, present some sort of way to consolidate all this and to bring it into some very easy to grasp sort of ideas and principles, because this is not an uncommon phenomenon, right? Like, there's, you know, at some point there is some sort of dissatisfaction in, I would say, just about every couple. I can't think of any couples that have never experienced dissatisfaction in their relationship, unless, you know, perhaps if it's a brand new couple, they just haven't hit that point yet.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I'm definitely picking up on the lack theme, like no intimacy, no affection, lack of boundaries, right? Lack of consideration for my feelings, critical, judgmental, lack of communication, abandonment, lack of trust, lack of common values, lack of being able to talk about things, right? It goes on and on. And it's definitely a common theme there. When we talk about a healthy marriage and a happy marriage, we often say happy and fulfilling, right? Have you guys often heard those terms put together? I have, and I often say that myself, like it's happy and fulfilling, meaning it's filling and there's no lack of the things that make you feel like you're aching for your needs to be met, aching because you're feeling lonely, aching because you feel rejected. And so what we want to talk about today, like Mark said, is what are some guiding principles that can help us turn that situation around when you're unhappy in your relationship? Mark, I'm going to be honest before we dive right into all of that the first thing I thought of came to my mind of, why are you unhappy in your marriage? And I was reading everyone's answers. It was always about the other person, almost always, not 100% of the time, but almost always it was about the other person and what they were doing wrong that was causing you to be unhappy. So as a mindset expert here, I would like to flip the scenario around and have you think about what your spouse would reply to this answer. How would they answer this, right? What answer would they give to why is your marriage unhappy? And I'm sure that they would do the same thing. And the problem when we get into you need to change, they need to do this, you need to do this, is then we're constantly blaming our feeling of dissatisfaction, unfulfillment, and unhappiness upon someone else. Now, a relationship is just that. It does involve two people, and there are things that need to be healed and work together for the entirety of the picture to be healthy and whole, right? And that's what we're talking about. But I really want to be mindful of the mindset of they need to change in order for this to work. They need to fix something in order for me to be healthy and happy, and become a little more self-reflective on what am I doing to contribute to the situation? How am I also making this not a happy and healthy situation? How would my spouse answer the same question? And when you really have more of that balanced perspective on the relationship, then we're able to actually make some real change for both parties so that that relationship can become healthy. That's often hard to do when you're inside of it, right? You guys have heard me say this before, if you've listened to the podcast or attended the masterclass or whatever, right? Is that you can't read the label when you're inside the bottle. So sometimes it's really hard to see how you might also be contributing to the unsatisfactoriness, the dissatisfaction, there we go, of the marriage, right? And of some of the problems that are coming up and some of the unhappiness. And so that's why it's really important to have an expert who knows how to read the label and see things clearly, because we're all inside the bottle of our own marriage. So with that being said, we're going to share now with what we can do to start to move things forward. So Mark, what do you think is really important to understand right off the bat?
So I think it's really key to understand, you know, if we're talking about a lot of lack and we're talking about, like you said, like a lot of blame towards other people, I think it's good to understand what it is that you're specifically lacking. I mean, that might seem obvious. You guys have all listed complaints, but I think it's important to understand where the complaints are coming from, what the principle is behind it. And so, you know, Heather and I, we have like a specific formula, essentially, like what creates a happy and healthy relationship. And I think it comes down to about five key elements here. You did mention just a moment ago, one of the big ones is fulfillment. And, you know, the big idea here is, are your needs supported in the relationship? It's not just, are they allowed? Can they happen? Because a lot of times, you know, we might meet our needs elsewhere, you know, needs for connection or whatnot. And that's can be okay. And that can be healthy in some cases. But it's just, when you approach the relationship, do you feel like what is needed is not just allowed, but encouraged and valued and supported within the relationship? I think is a really key idea. If we're trying to even go a little bit deeper into this and say, well, what does it mean? Like, are my needs supported? Heather and I like to default into Chloe Madonna's six basic emotional needs: needs for connection, variety, security, significance, growth, and contribution. Yeah, I think I got it. There we are. Had to do a little mental checklist there. Is you know, a good place to start with all of that. Second of all, you know, is the element of feedback. So if things aren't going well and it's not feeling fulfilled, do you have an ability to speak up and have your concerns resolved? You know, third, is there intimacy? Is there an ability to have openness, vulnerability, and depth to the relationship? Fourth would be, is there positive regard? As in, is there a default positive view of each other? Are positive assumptions made primarily before negative assumptions? And then lastly, is there commitment? Does the relationship feel steady and secure? Are small bumps met with resolve to fix them? Is there a desire to maintain a healthy relationship from both parties? So if these are the five kind of foundational principles for a healthy and happy relationship, the whole topic today is like, why are you unhappy in your relationship? Then it's easy to assume, like we said earlier, that a lack in these areas can create that dissatisfaction. And I want to kind of go over what creates problems in each of these foundational principles and get a little bit of an examination on that. You know, a little bit of a discussion, you know, if we have time, and how to step away from that perhaps. So Heather, we want to start off with the first one. Like, what creates problems with feeling fulfilled, with having fulfillment and a supportive needs within a relationship?
Right. So when your needs aren't met, that creates a lot of insecurity, a lot of emotional distress, and ultimately unhappiness, right? So some of the things that can lead to that is sometimes we just become so busy with other things. Sometimes we're prioritizing jobs, parenting, our own personal hobbies, our interests, careers, right? I mentioned jobs. And so maybe we're not intentionally not meeting each other's needs, but maybe we've just allowed other things to become a little more important. Or sometimes we feel like, you know, I've often heard that, well, I'm doing this for my family, right? And we may be completely unaware of what our family is actually needing from us and making assumptions about what they're needing. So that could be one element that leads to things feeling really unfulfilled. Another one may be that you're not actively preventing your partner's needs from being met, or maybe they are, but maybe there just isn't enough support going on to meet those needs. Mark, you've worked with so many couples. Can you give an example of what that could look like?
Oftentimes I chalk these sort of situations up to people feeling overwhelmed. So like it may not be like an example here. And I see this quite frequently with women, for example. There's some desire to have further connection. There might be some desire, like, I want to go have a girls' night out. And for some reason, there's a lot of problems around that. It might be viewed with an unsupportive partner. It might say that, like, why do I have to, and I hate this word for parents, why do I have to babysit the kids while you go out and have fun? Mm-hmm. Things like that, where just being able to have some basic time or fulfillment in situation is, there's active complaints or resistance. And that's really, I think, where it comes from is, I don't think like when people sit down that logically speaking, anyone would really say, no, my husband or my wife shouldn't be happy. It oftentimes is more like, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't have the capacity to provide extra support. And so I'm going to put up some resistance because I'm feeling like it's too much for me. If I had to say, it's much more than, I don't frequently see a lot of malice. It's much more like a little bit of not seeing the self-centeredness in some of those actions that's happening. So that's a little bit more of what I see. But I can also see, just oftentimes, if you have a partner who's not being super supportive, then the other partner tends to drift away. And this is another situation where the relationship can become unfulfilling. It's when not enough is invested into the relationship, it becomes a little less motivating to invest yourself. And so it's just really easy for it to become less and less fulfilling as you are each investing less and less energy into the relationship and more into other things. This can basically, if we had to sum it up, it can happen either from neglect, from overwhelm and stress, or from a little bit of self-centeredness is usually where this is coming from. So
we're not talking about maybe some of the deeper things of like deep-rooted fears and insecurities and negative narratives, right?
Oh, there could be all sorts of deeper stuff here.
Yeah, but maybe carries over into some of the other categories I'm seeing.
It could be.
Yeah.
Ultimately speaking, we're putting things into categories here. Yeah. There. And on some level, I think to myself, to what degree do we need to really say, well, it's in this category and not in that category? I'm my approach when I'm helping clients is I'm much more interested in solutions and identifying what people are wanting and how to get to that rather than being very specific on the label of dysfunction.
Yeah.
So in that vein, if things are feeling unfulfilling, how does our audience take some action to remedy that, do you think?
Yeah. First, I just wanted to just leave a comment. If you are raising your hand saying, yeah, I feel like that's going on in my marriage, it is feeling unfulfilling. Oftentimes we'll hear this when we hear something like, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. Like, I do care for you, but the passion and the romance, the fulfillment here is lacking, right? And so we're very motivated to maintain relationships when they feel fulfilling, right? When we feel like our needs are met for connection, we're feeling secure, there's variety, there's significance, and we also are able to have those core emotional needs met. So the solution would be to go first and invest more into the relationship yourself, right? That's what we always start with. Most of our clients have a spouse that's unwilling to work on the marriage with them, and it has to start with you and you being willing to look at what can you do. Now, here comes the big thing, is that most people feel like they're helpless and there's nothing they can do. And we've simply proven that that's not true when you have the right method and the right support along the way, right? So, Mark, as we're helping people to take that first step in what they can do themselves to make the relationship more fulfilling, what do we often start with?
Well, I usually, you know, that can sometimes be a hard prospect to go first, to invest more into the relationship. Sometimes, you know, one of the things that we often suggest is to have clear expectations, to have clear agreements within the relationship. Perhaps, you know, it means having the confidence or the proactive behavior to make requests and have clear communication about your own needs and be willing to, you know, do that. And at the same time, be willing to accommodate your partner in being able to for them to meet their needs. And basically, if we get right down to it, you guys have to actually look at what is, you have to actually look at needs and you have to communicate about it. You have to be willing to invest into the relationship and you have to be willing to have confidence enough in your partner to be there for you when you are requesting that investment in return. But it is easier, we are saying, if you can invest a bit first.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that ability to give feedback, to be able to make a clear request goes really well into our next point here, yes. Right? Which is when you feel like you're unable to have a voice, you do not have open feedback or the ability to solve problems. We'll often see this as like, we can't communicate. We just argue all the time. Everything is really tense. I don't have a voice. I feel like I'm not heard. I'm not respected. And so, you know, whether things are going well or not, a healthy and happy relationship needs to have the ability for there to be feedback, right? And for something to be done about that feedback. Being able to address issues and resolve them healthfully is exactly what you need in a healthy relationship. I think one of the most naive things to think is that there's just never going to be any problems. Like if you really love each other, you'll never fight, right? Or something like there's always going to be issues in any relationship. It's how we deal with those issues that's so important, right? So if you aren't feeling fulfilled because there isn't enough connection, maybe as an example, you know, normally that isn't a huge problem if there's some ability to correct this. But Mark, we've seen so many marriages, right? And so many couples. Would you say that the majority of people do not know how to resolve issues and do not know how to give and receive feedback?
Well, I mean, by default, I think if a couple knew how to have really good and healthy feedback, for the most part, they wouldn't really need to be talking to us. Now, that's not every single case, because, you know, normally one of the first sessions that I have with clients is actually to look at a lot of these principles and see where the problem is. And there are some occasions where they are able to talk about things and to discuss problems, but there are other issues in the relationship. But more often than not, I would say 90% of the time, it's an issue with feedback.
Yeah. So what happens that really causes a lack of communication or a lack of ability to give and receive feedback?
Well, it tends to come down into one of two things. Either feedback and discussion is avoided, as in one or both partners actively disengage when discussions need to happen. Something like this, you know, Gottman, he has his famous principles. Like one of the things that really has the potential to end relationships is stonewalling. And essentially this is like avoidance of feedback, but you know, this avoidance may look like a lot of different things. You know, I was just talking with a couple recently where neither one of them really like to talk about problems. And, you know, the worst it gets is maybe, you know, like the only way that they're able to approach this is by having, you know, emailing each other. And even that, it's, I could see a lot of kind of skirting around the topics and just because disagreements were so uncomfortable for them. But so it's either going to be that kind of avoidance, or perhaps feedback is shut down. It's dismissed, minimized, it's made to feel unsafe. You know, even benign comments, you know, if you're husband or wife is coming to you and saying that they're not happy, and you say, well, that's not such a big deal. Why do you always have to bring up problems? Hey, we're fine. You know, you're just, you know, and they put some label on it. This kind of pushing down of opinions or and not really taking them into consideration or taking them seriously is another thing that really prevents healthy feedback, where concerns or feedback is provided and then it doesn't go anywhere. Or the just the topic of feedback is made to feel so unsafe because there's volatile reactions to it that, you know, people learn to go towards avoidance once again.
Yeah. Right. And another element there is, like you talked about, volatile. It can just turn into an absolute shouting match or name calling or blaming each other. So you're not able to actually get to the point where you're actually giving and receiving feedback. Yeah. I was given this analogy once from a marriage coach that I thought was really helpful. It's like tossing a football back and forth to each other. I toss it to you. You have to catch it. You have to receive the feedback. So how do we do that, right? And then send it back. And it's just that idea there of being able to share back and forth really openly. Now that seems really scary and foreign to so many people because again, these skills aren't taught, right? I said the studies have shown 92% of couples say they're not happy in their marriage. So they're either A, divorced, because over 50% of couples are getting divorced, or of those that stay together, most of them are not happy. And it really comes down to, this one is a huge one to me, the ability to give and receive feedback, the ability to repair damage, the ability to talk about and address things that are important to us. So this will change your life. Like, this is such a foundational skill that helps in every single relationship you will ever have, not just marriage, but with your children, with your coworkers, your boss, your employees, anyone, my mom, right? Anyone, right? So it's so important for there to be to know these skills. So how, Mark, do we create safety in communication so that we can give and receive feedback in a way that feels safe and be able to solve these issues?
I mean, that's a big topic in and of itself, but if I had to make it very, give a very succinct or just brief answer, I like comparing this, like what is needed to like a safe harbor. So, you know, we have like a harbor here, and you might have an ocean outside of the harbor, waves come in. And then what happens with all this tumultuous activity is it just kind of, the harbor kind of absorbs things and calms everything down. And this is the stance that I think is ideal for when there is volatility in a relationship. I mean, of course, this is much easier said than done. I can say, create this safe environment, create the safe harbor. But the basic principles is like, hey, you need to be able to be present with some negative emotions. You need to be able to absorb that a little bit, and you need to the point where the person feels heard and this can all calm down. And then you get the ability to, you know, talk about it rationally is oftentimes a really good approach. I mean, I personally think that this is a big reason why many people find a lot of use out of going to a professional, is because, you know, most professionals, say therapists or coaches and whatnot, do this well. There's a lot of volatility that comes into a session, and that all that volatility is received, and there's patience and there's acceptance around those feelings. And then there is some safe examination of what is going on, and, you know, effective therapists and coaches will then give a good direction for all that energy to go in.
Yeah, helping to de-escalate a situation for sure.
And I think the same principle that, you know, is applied in healing environments is really useful for having good feedback in a relationship as well.
Yeah. There are so many different elements that play into this based on your personality type, your spouse's personality type, your upbringing and what was modeled to you and what your experience was, what their upbringing was, what was modeled to them, right? Our habits. One of the things I love that we do, Mark, with our clients is a pattern interrupt, especially when it comes to communication, because this is where you can really empower yourself. We often get, like I said, there's a lot of habits. There's a lot of programming from our parents and modeling of how we handle confrontation or issues, right? How we deal with relationships. But when we can say, I actually have a choice here of how I'm going to engage or not in this conversation, right? And choosing a different, more healthy way is so powerful. And I love it when our clients learn, oh, when I just get outside of my perspective, when I put down maybe some of my defense mechanisms here, right? Because so many of us are so on the defensive with our spouse and we're so insecure and we're so full of fear and we're so like hyped up about it that as soon as they say anything, we immediately turn it back to them or we just shut down or, you know, any of those ways that we handle things. And so what I love that our coaches do is we work with you and show you like, here is an incredible opportunity that you have to do something in just a slightly different way, to take a deep breath, to center yourself, to process through some of those emotions so you don't just react out of them and rely on your biological instincts. Our biological instincts are always going to cause us to go to fight, flight, or freeze mode when we're in these heightened emotional states, right? And so just learning how to make a few shifts in that makes you feel better. Like you feel calm, you feel centered, you feel empowered because you have choice here. You have absolute control over this. So when I'm reading all these comments, like whatever, 70 something comments to our question, and I'm seeing the majority of them are saying this person, that they did this, my partner's affair, lack of them doing this, lack of them doing that. This is where you have the choice and the ability to do something yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And choose how you interact with your spouse, how to create safety there, how to see their perspective. For me, that was a game changer. And I've seen it be such a game changer for our clients too. To understand where your spouse is really coming from gives you a sense of empathy and understanding. And you can even validate, I see that this is true for you. And that right there is, again, that pattern interrupt. We used to do things one way and we're used to doing them for maybe a long, long time. And now we're going to learn how to do them in a slightly new way. And when you do things in a new way, you're going to get a new result. So this is one of the most amazing things that starts to really turn things around quickly for clients. And for you guys, when you do it, is learn how to pattern interrupt your communication, learn how to create a safe space for your partner, learn how to give and receive feedback so that you can solve problems and create solutions there. Yes. And there's a lot to it. Like Mark said, we could go on and on about any of these, but I encourage you guys, if you're feeling really stuck, you're feeling like, I don't have a voice, or you're feeling like, I don't know, I just keep blowing up. I've got such a hot head temper, you know, or you're feeling like, wow, they just dismiss me. They're so cold. They're so shut down, or they're so withdrawn. We can absolutely help you with that. We can help you identify what's going on and how to make just a few changes that will start to turn things around so fast. And I love seeing that with clients. It makes me so happy. It makes me just joyful to hear that you guys are doing that. And like our win, like she says, it's a small win. It's not a small win at all, actually, right? Husband was not responsive to texts, and now he calls her. That's a pattern interrupt. They're starting to do things in a new way. So Mark and I, we share these really broad principles and a desire to try to give solutions to as many people as possible. But when it comes down to it, we have to work with you on your marriage and help identify what are the blocks in your communication right now, what's preventing you guys from being able to give and receive that feedback and have safety in your communication so that we can increase that communication. As we increase that level of safety and understanding, it brings us to the next point, which is all about intimacy. So Mark, take it away about intimacy, this feeling of lack of romance. It could be all kinds of intimacy. When we use that word, we're not only saying sexual intimacy, although it does include that, but it really means more than just sexual intimacy. Yes. It means this depth to the relationship.
Yeah. I mean, a large part of what intimacy is, it's how open, how vulnerable, how authentic, and how genuine you can be with your partner. And you know, I'm reminded of even someone I was just talking to the other day. We were discussing this very matter. We were saying, okay, hey, the relationship wasn't feeling fulfilled, you know, that first principle. largely because there wasn't any ability to have feedback. And a large reason why there wasn't any feedback is because being open and genuine didn't feel safe to this client of mine. And this is, I think, oftentimes where the unhappiness in this principle comes about is intimacy begins to get shut down as being open feels unsafe, uncomfortable, either through harsh interactions, perhaps a lack of understanding and acceptance, or perhaps just simply through a lack of practice, as in there's some drifting apart. Many people, I think, who lack some amount of intimacy describe their relationship with their partners as feeling like roommates is one. That's mostly where they drift apart. You know, roommates generally can get along, but they don't have the same depth to the relationship that, say, someone who's really in love might have. Other times when it's a lot worse, they might not even be roommates. They might say, I actively feel uncomfortable just the thought of opening up to my partner, the thought of exposing some sort of vulnerability or weakness. And, you know, yes, that kind of emotional lack of intimacy, I do frequently feel like that is at the root of why maybe some of the sexual intimacy is often lacking as well, is if emotionally things don't feel safe. My experience is that very few people are willing to be more vulnerable and intimate sexually as well. I will say that that tends to be the stereotype is that tends to be more of a trait for women. And I hate to use gender stereotypes, but I it does seem to me that there seems to be a little bit more importance placed on with women for emotional intimacy before sexual intimacy. Maybe you can comment on that, but yeah, the stereotype is there. That seems to be my observation. But anyways, this is, like I said, where a lot of the unhappiness is coming from is you can't have that openness in your relationship. And that certainly is going to cause problems in the long run. These are going to create empty feeling relationships. These are going to feel, these relationships are going to feel a little bit disquieting and uncomfortable. People who are experiencing this, you know, they might be around each other and they might not feel like at home with each other. You know, just the ability to relax and cut loose and be yourself is gone when this is a really big problem. And people don't like to sit in that. Just that's how it is. Anyways, thoughts, Heather, what are your thoughts on this?
So if you guys have listened to our podcast before, we've definitely talked about the intimacy cycle. And it kind of goes back to, I mean, all of these can be so related to each other. You can see like the overlapping correlations. They're not like clear cut boxes, like we said, that when needs aren't met and we feel rejected, then sometimes also, you know, like we'll have a situation where maybe the wife wanted to connect with her husband emotionally at the end of the day and wanted to share with him how she felt about something. And maybe he was a little distracted and was watching the game or on the phone. And she felt like he wasn't there for her emotionally. And then later that night, when he wants to get physical and sexual with her, she rejects him. She's like, you didn't even listen to me. And now you just want to get in bed. Like, yeah. Right. And so then he feels rejected. And then the next time she wants to talk to him, he's like, why am I going to talk to you? Like, you weren't even like, you keep off putting me. And so needs aren't being met and we continue to reject each other's needs. And then that creates more and more disconnection and lack of intimacy. That's something that we can observe often. It's not the entirety of what everyone's ever experienced, but that's a very common pattern that can occur. And so the opposite is true, right? Is that when you meet their needs and you create safety, this is the solution, right? Safety needs to be created either through clearer or stronger boundaries, you know, maybe clear requests or more consideration of your partner and what their needs really are, where they're really coming from, why they're really doing what they're doing. Because my friends, more often than not, we are just making assumptions. And we do not really know where they're coming from and why they're doing what they're really doing. And more often than not, we feel like we're so far apart. But really, what we're really wanting at the end of the day as human beings is all very much the same. the thing that your wife is wanting, that your husband is wanting, is often very much the same. And so when you can have consideration for where they're coming from and understand that when you give them that gift of love, of acceptance, of meeting their needs, of giving them some patience and some empathy, then it really starts to turn things around. And it is a process, right? Especially if things have disintegrated significantly, it's going to take some time to make things safe enough for there to be more vulnerability. We've talked in the past before about, you know, that vulnerability is necessary. It's like the requirement. If you were to look on the intimacy label, like nutrition label, the ingredient would be vulnerability, right? Absolutely. So there needs to be healthy amounts of vulnerability with safety, that vulnerability is met with safety and it's met with acceptance and and we're going to go to the next part, positive regard, right? That creates an ability to be closer and safer. And it is a process, but it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And that's why marriage is so, so special. In fact, I believe it's sacred that we are able to be that open and that real and honest and raw and vulnerable with another human being. I'll tell my husband now, in fact, I think I did it like twice this last week. I have something scary I want to tell you. Like, it's scary for me to tell you this, right? And I will open up and I'll say, I'm really feeling like I'm failing at managing our finances right now. Like, I feel like I am just spending and I'm a maniac and I feel like I'm out of control. And that was scary to admit, right? It was scary because I wanted to put forth this persona. I've got it all together. We're fine. Like, everything's good. And for me to recognize and be like, you know what? I really overspent the last couple of weeks and admit that was hard, right? Mm-hmm. But then he met it with safety. He met it with this acceptance and this consideration. He met it with patience and empathy, which rewarded my vulnerability. And he's like, thank you for sharing that, right? And so then now I feel more safe to talk about it. And it's not such a taboo subject. Now I recognize this is not a major issue, right? But it's an example of how this intimacy cycle works and how we can be safe and secure with sharing vulnerable and scary things with each other. And when it's shared, it actually strengthens the relationship and creates more connection.
I'm from your story and even other examples that I've heard, I found it interesting that even though you were the one that was perhaps in a position where you had to be more vulnerable, where there was potentially some judgment that might have been coming your way, you were able to create more intimacy by being very clear with what you needed in order to be vulnerable. And this is the big thing that I wanted to point out. We could say, oh, well, my partner doesn't make things feel safe. And that even in those circumstances, you still have a lot of control over creating more intimacy in the relationship by being more bold with, you know, what is needed, by being proactive with communicating boundaries. And it's not just, oh, my partner needs to make some changes so that we can have more safety and more intimacy.
Right. All right. Let's go on to our next one, which is a lack of positive regard. So this happens when our beliefs, our views, or our regard toward our partner is negative. Mm-hmm. Again, this is one of the things that we focus on that I think really differentiates us and probably is not something that's talked a lot about by others, is this negative belief or narrative that our spouse may have about us or that we may have about them or the relationship. So where does this lack of positive regard really come from, Mark?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people see this as problematic within relationships. It's oftentimes there's, when this is present, there's a lot of blame, criticism, hurtful remarks in interactions. I mean, Gottman also, we refer a lot to Gottman here. Gottman, you know, talks about the situation as contempt, you know, that negative view of your partner. But the question you're saying, well, what creates this? My observation, or actually, I think you and I have both talked about this, is that it generally is coming from this place where intentions and motivations are really unclear with other people. And a lot of times we as human beings, we have to fill in the blanks and assume intentions and motivations in others, even though there might not be a lot of evidence. Or we might think that there's a lot of evidence, but it's not really actual clear evidence. And this is where the problem is. My observation is that because intentions and motivations aren't generally communicated and we have to fill in the blanks, those blanks I see are often filled with how we feel in the moment. Or, and so if you're having a fight and your partner says something that could be misinterpreted as like an insult, automatically you're going to be like, okay, well, that's what they're intending. They're intending this to be insulting and damaging. And we filled in that blank. So the negative regard here is just the tendency to fill in those blanks more frequently with those negative intentions and motivations. So that's my, or our, actually, like I said, you and I have talked about, this is our kind of thought on this, is that's just what happens naturally out in the wild with humans. So if this is our tendency, why do we have this situation with our spouse where a negative regard develops? My theory on this is that, you know, when you start having some negative interpretations, it's really easy for that to snowball. Yeah. For it to build up more and more. It's easy to say, okay, well, my partner intended to insult me here. That means they don't like me. So now I'm going to look for evidence that they don't like me and they look down on me and they judge me. And so now when there's another one of these unclear intentions, it's easy for me to fill in the blank there. Mm-hmm. And say, see, here's more evidence that they're doing more of the same thing.
It's called the reticular activating system of our brain. Our brain looks for evidence to support that what we thought in the past is still true and starts to pick up all the correlations of our brain loves to make correlations and connections. So it can save energy actually. And so it just looks at all this different evidence of, yeah, this is true. And here it's true. And there it's true. So one of the most powerful exercises that I ever did was given to me by a marriage expert. I go to marriage experts and marriage coaches myself, because again, can't see the label in my own bottle of my marriage, right? Was going through an exercise about the storytelling and telling a different story about different situations. And the questions ranged from everything like, if I'm attracted to a person outside of my marriage, the story I tell myself about that is this, right? What else could be true about that? What could be a different story? Or even political questions. So I encourage you guys to look at this, because this is where so many of the problems lie in our marriage and the world. We say, okay, this is the political story. I assume that the other party or other belief system, other religion, whatever you have it, the other person, that this is what they're intending. Yeah. And then when you flip it around and be like, is there another way of looking at that? So it's identifying what's the fact here, what's the thing that actually happened, and then what is the story that I'm telling about it, and what other story could there be around it? What else could be, what other options could there be? And it's really powerful. I had to do that even this summer when someone said something pretty offensive to my daughter. At a family reunion, I had to be like, okay, here's the fact. This is what was actually said. Here's what I'm telling myself about it, mm-hmm. right? Is that they're trying to, you know, body shame my daughter. Is that true? Had to question my assumptions, my belief about it, and then think about what else could be true about it. Where could they have been coming from? Well, maybe she was just trying to, out of love and concern, guide my daughter because she cares about her. Maybe in her own life, this was this, and her own, you know. So we have to be careful about the stories and the assumptions that we make. Now, when it comes to your partner having a negative story about you, that's exactly what we help you change in our coaching. And that's more than we have time to go through right now. It's our entire path program. But the bottom line is that the solution is clear communication, especially around these intentions, right? And then really calling attention to positive interpretations and intentions. And we can recognize that there are differences between the story that I'm telling and the actual fact. So I've learned to pretty much don't trust my own brain. I know that might sound weird, but almost always the story that I tell, because I'm still a human being that is not ascended fully into greatness, is that I tell a negative story, right? Mark, you talked about this as a common occurrence.
Oh, yeah.
So when I question the story that my brain immediately decided was the truth, and I recognize, oh, more often than not, I'm wrong. And what is really going on. And then as you start to develop a muscle of, I actually want to look at you positively. I'm actually going to tell a positive story about this. If you guys haven't heard about Mark's home messages, encourage you to go check out podcasts around that if you want more help with this, because that is so powerful in creating this new, beautiful, healthy, and happy story to your marriage. Okay. All right, let's go to the last one. Yeah. Lack of commitment. What do we see here, Mark?
Well, I mean, this comes out in a lot of different ways. You know, the most common thing that we think of when there's lack of commitment, everyone thinks, okay, infidelity, affairs. Yeah. That's, I think you would agree, the first thing that comes to mind. But really, like, it can look like a lot of different things. It might mean other people or activities are prioritized too often above the relationship. It might even be frequent discussion of separation or divorce when problems arise. I've certainly seen that a lot. I know I've had many a client said, I threw around the word divorce too often. And then at some point, my spouse took me up on the offer when I didn't actually mean it. Mm. I don't even know how many times, I can't even count how many times that specific scenario happened. But or perhaps keeping tabs on other options in case the current relationship doesn't work out. I've recently spoken with someone who was actually like keeping commitment away from his marriage by making sure that he had options to get out. Like there's a prenup agreement and there was keeping bank accounts separate, like all these other things to protect himself from being totally tied to his partner actually caused the relationship to feel less secure. But that's like a lot of like where this comes from, a lot of like where this problem actually becomes a problem. It's when these factors, these principles start to do just that, is it starts to create the sense of insecurity or a lack of sureness about the relationship. You know, sometimes we talk about this in other terms. There are actually different types of like commitment within a relationship. And we sometimes have these things that we call structural commitments, things like having shared bank accounts and children and an actual marriage license, you know, actually being legally married, or, you know, just all those things that are not directly part of the relationship, but tie you together in the long term. And then we have personal commitment, like how much do I actually like my partner and how fulfilling does this feel? And what we've observed is that personal commitment tends to go up and down day to day. And that a lot of like what creates a long lasting relationship is having some of those structural commitments be really firm so that when things do dip, the relationship still does feel secure. Mm-hmm. But if we had to talk a lot about like, where's the problem? Where does this create unhappiness? It is that insecurity and that lack of sureness, however that might look. Because if you don't feel secure, it spills out into other areas. It's harder to invest into the relationship. It's harder to be open and to be vulnerable, because what happens if the relationship falls apart? It causes people to be a little bit less present, a little less invested, and that's going to have problems with fulfillment. But this, where I don't normally see this as the primary problem, it tends to be a result of other, you know, deficits in some of these other areas we've talked about. I do occasionally see this as a primary problem, like the one that I listed, where one of the partners was actively preventing structural commitments from being present in the relationship. But
yeah,
that's
the, and this, you know, interestingly enough, is usually what people push for first, is they want that commitment because it does feel insecure when you're partner's not committed to you. It feels deeply insecure and very scary, and a lot of feelings of rejection and hurt. And so oftentimes you're just trying to fill that fear and not, you know, you want to resolve that. But one of the problems that that creates when you're pushing for commitment too soon is that it backfires, because oftentimes it's not the primary issue. Like Mark said, very rarely is it the actual issue. And so we actually look at commitment as the final piece of the marriage restoration in its entirety, because there's other things that need to be resolved before the relationship is ready to talk about commitment again. But oftentimes you'll be like, well, we made vows and our religion's against divorce. And what about the kids? And we need to be committed. You committed to me. And they're like, I'm done. And if they're done, then you talking about commitment all day long is only going to do one thing, push them further away. And so what we really want to do is solve those other issues first, right? Look at other problem areas and solve those problems in order. And then it will lead to the feeling of security that you're wanting, because they want to be committed to you. If you push for commitment too soon, it's going to backfire, or it's not going to be actually what you want anyway, right? So people think that that's what they want. They want to hear their spouse say, I'm coming back to you. I'm so sorry. I love you forever. I'm going to put my wedding ring back on and let's go renew our vows, right? But if you rushed into that right now with where your marriage is at, it wouldn't actually be what you want. What you really want is a healthy, fulfilling relationship where we talked about all those other things being met as well, that needs are met. They are able to talk about problems. You're able to be open and honest. You're able to have, you know, that intimacy and that level of connection and vulnerability where the relationship is safe. And then you can have this level of commitment. Like, I'm committed to you, not just on a structural level, but I'm committed to you because I love you and I want to be with you forever. So ask yourself, how great would it be to have my spouse say they want to be with me? They want to be committed to this relationship. They're in it just as much, if not more, than I am. That's what we're talking about here. Mark, any final thoughts on that?
Yeah, if we're talking about solutions to this, almost always when there are problems with commitment, much like you're saying, this is almost like the commitment is almost like a result of other problems being resolved. But, you know, if I am generally making recommendations towards building commitment, I actually say, hey, actually keep the pressure off of commitment. And, you know, make sure that you're not pressuring your partner into committing too soon, because that's going to create all sorts of other problems. Generally, actually, like, being very supportive of how comfortable your partner feels with commitment at the time, even though that might seem counterintuitive, to say, you know what, you don't need to be committed to me right now. I understand that things aren't in a good place. Oddly enough, that tends to pique their interest a little bit more and tends to get them a little bit more like actually looking at, like, why am I not wanting to be committed? Is there something that can be done? I'm really appreciating that my partner's having patience with me and is actually paying attention to how I feel. It tends to create more commitment the more you back away from it.
Yeah, it is exactly that. It's a cat and mouse game. You take the pressure off, it gets their attention, and it gives them that space to take some steps towards you. I talk about in the masterclass sometimes it flips their emotional switch so that they're actually taking some steps towards you, just like our client win was at the beginning, right? Well, we look for that. Yeah.
I think it's a lot more of a like when you're able to do this, most of my clients, when they get to this place, they're coming from a much more confident sort of position, like some sort of position where they're going to be okay no matter what happens. And that's something that's really attractive.
It is.
And, you know, the less desperate that you are presenting yourself, I mean, if you're coming at these sort of situations where there's low commitment and you say, please be with me, you have to be with me, it's this very desperate sort of me-centered energy. And if they're hurting, they're not going to respond to that at all. So flipping that around, being like, you know, it's okay that you're not committed right now. I understand that there's some problems and I want to resolve these things first, really takes away from that desperation. And it's going to be a much more attractive situation to step into.
Yes, it is. And it's respecting them and hearing them, and they will feel it and you will feel it. And that's what we help you guys with right off the bat. That's how our coaching program works. So if you want more help with that, we do a free marriage analysis where we read the label on your bottle and help you understand what's really going on there. So if you're like you're lacking any of these five things to have a healthy and happy relationship, then encourage you guys to get on one of those complimentary marriage sessions at highthrivecoaching.com/apply, or just leave a comment saying me and we will reach out to you in the comments. All right. I think we're going to skip our marriage myth buster today for sake of time. We went a little bit deeper into all of this, but it was so worth it. Right, guys? Let us know what you took away from today. What really stood out to you? Where do you feel like you're at with things and where do you want to go? And we promise that as you decide where you want to go, then the way will make itself manifest and you will be able to see amazing things happen in your marriage when you really decide where you want to go and you commit to get there. All right. So next week, we're going to share with you how to save your marriage, even if you are separated. So those of you who are dealing with separation, that episode is going to be specifically geared towards you. Thank you so much, Mark. And thank you all for joining us today.
Thanks, everyone. See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.